From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey there, this is Trish Wood, and we're back for hour two. That was an amazing first hour with Chris Bray. You really must investigate his Substack, which is Tell Me How This Ends. He is one of the smartest American essayists writing today. He thinks deeply. He's got a military historian background, and he's also a very firm nature lover. He's a guy that goes out and goes camping when he's upset, so he knows important things about the woods and that sort of stuff. But he's a great writer. He has a magnificent turn of phrase, so do treat yourself. I love to showcase these people because legacy media is such crap that when we're finding people whose work is worth elevating, and as good as the New Yorker used to be when the New Yorker was worth something, which was maybe like 10 years ago, not since. It's insane. I mean, remember in the last hour, he was quoting how the New Yorker is trying to take down Oliver Anthony. I mean, a guy writes a working class struggle song and New Yorker has to weigh in and crap on it. I mean, really, that's just like, ugh, embarrassing. So we have all these great writers coming up, primarily through Substack, where Seymour Hersh, you know, the great, the one and only Seymour Hersh is writing now. He said to me about his story he wrote exposing that America blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. I had him on my show, and he said, I didn't even take it to the New York Times. Imagine that, the world's most famous and gifted investigative reporter, and he can't even take his explosive work to the New York Times because they are no longer interested in the truth. The truth is inconvenient now. So that's what we try to do on this show. Brownstone is publishing some good stuff. Substack is publishing good stuff. And you can find it all there. I think the trick for people now is if you find your favorite writers, and many of whom do it full time, as Chris does, you've got to sort out how to financially support them if you can, right? We can't rely on freebie media anymore in this new world, since we can't rely on legacy media at all. So if you find people that you really like and you can afford it, it's usually like $5 a month. It's worth doing, right? So because they don't take in advertising. So it's worth doing. I'm coming up on an interview with Chris Barber, as I said in the last hour, and I'll just repeat this for you. And then, of course, Chris Bray coincidentally mentioned the truckers too and how much he admired them. They are heading to trial in September, and we don't know how that's going to work out. And we cannot ever forget what is happening to these good people. The legacy media wants to memory hole this stuff, and I'm sure they'll find a totally unfair way to cover the trial because that's how they covered the convoy itself. But we're not going to let that happen. And we have to stay in touch with them and follow them through, because I feel the same kind of lawfare that's being used in America right now against Trump and other people who are in the crosshairs of the Biden administration and his election campaign. I think the same things are happening here. That is what this is about. Tie people up, tie them up, and make them go broke trying to fund these. I mean, it's really awful. Plus, it's scary too. And so we got to keep reporting on this and paying attention to it. And with that, I will throw to Chris Barber, who is standing by. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good morning, Trish. I'm fine. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Always happy to have you. So just to update people who don't fully understand where we are in the course of your legal troubles, what exactly is happening in the beginning of September? What are the charges, and what are you expecting is going to happen?
Well, our trial starts September 5th. I'll be leaving home in Saskatchewan here on a 3,000-kilometer drive, so I have a vehicle out in the nation's capital for the first month of trial, I guess. The trial is approximately 20 days in length, based over just about 2 months. So the month of September is going to be fairly full. We are charged, I'm charged with seven indictable offenses, one being mischief, the other being intimidation of a peace officer. Number three is going against a court order. I've got two of those charges, and then there's three counseling to commit charges on top of that. So they're indictable offenses. They're seeking a prison term of 2 to 10 years in federal prison for Tamara and myself. Tamara is, I believe she's six indictable offenses. I've got the seventh for the going against a court order, as well as Tamara then has to defend her breach charge when she was, you know, arrested after being released and then rearrested and then thrown back in jail with some horrible conditions for, what was it? She's in there for a total of 49 days for mischief.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's astonishing, isn't it? So I want to know too. You have also, as I understand it, there's a civil case against you all too. Explain what that is.
Yeah. So Zexy Lee, a citizen of Ottawa, was sought out by lawyer Paul Champ and some counselors for the city of Ottawa, and come up with this nice little civil suit against Tamara, myself, and others. $400 million is what they're seeking in damages. Right now, there's only two people, per se, two citizens, and two entities. There's a union in Ottawa and a coffee company called Happy Goat Coffee Company that's suing us for $400 million. So we're working our way through the courts right now with that. Wow. I've never been involved with so many lawyers in my life, Trish, but they're good people.
I just want to say, Chris, I want to pick up with what you were talking about, the civil suit, because it seemed really silly. But I do another show called Trish Wood is Critical, and I frequently interview people from around the world, and they all talk about you guys. They all admire you so much. They're all so angry about the frozen bank accounts. I don't think I've ever talked to a foreign thinker about some of the issues facing the world that they don't circle back to the Freedom Convoy and the freezing of those accounts and what was done to you. You really made a difference at a time when people, I know you hear this all the time, but it's just, that will never change what you did. And I know you've got, I'm using the word struggle a lot today, but you got struggles coming ahead of you for sure. And you've had them really since the convoy began, but you did make a difference and people talk about it. They know who you are. And I hope that gives you a little bit of lift as you head into what's probably going to be a tricky month down there in Ottawa. I, by the way, I'm going to be there too, and I'll be reporting there. Yeah, I'll be reporting from there as well. So I'm happy to do that. I think it's important.
It'll be great to see you. A lot of people still don't know that those funds are still frozen to this day. All the money that was donated by you know, Americans or whoever donated to the Freedom Convoy, it's all been trapped in escrow now for over a year.
I can't even believe it. It's ridiculous. It's like we're not living in a democracy anymore. And you know what's scary about it, Chris? No. There are many scary things, but one of the scary things is that the rest of the country should be mad too on your behalf, and that they are accepting that this is normal behavior to pro. You know, if you guys, I'm just going to say it, if you guys were Black Lives Matter being treated this way, there'd be hell to pay. There'd be people in the streets. Politicians would be lining up to kiss the ring. But because it's you guys, you know, too many of my fellow Canadians are silent and they're stupid because, you know, right now, people, maybe they don't agree with her being persecuted, but the next time this thing goes sideways, it might be against someone that they do agree with. And by then it'll be too late. So everybody needs to rethink their position on this, in my view. Okay. Let's go back to where we were.
I said it a little while ago. Could you imagine if this was the LGBTQ plus community that decided to stand up to the government, you know, 19, 20 months ago, and they did this to any group of people. This could happen to any group of people, no matter your colors, anything. And this is what's being happened to us right now. So people need to keep that in mind when they're going forward here. This is setting a precedent going forward, whether you're on the left or the right. It doesn't matter what side you're on. This is big.
Well, and as I was speaking to Chris Bray about in the first hour, we were talking about this Rich Man North of Richmond song that, you know, the left are attacking like mad because it implies that the struggle is for all of us and the solidarity must be for all of us, not just breaking up into groups of grievance, right? But that Black people are oppressed by this new corporate mania. white people, you know, everybody's oppressed. So what they want to do is keep us fighting amongst each other so that they can run off with our money. That's kind of what's going on. But
basically,
and you guys showed that. But let's get back to the civil suit, because I think people don't know about that. It's so, the amount of money is ridiculous. And what exactly are you being accused of? What is the problem here?
Inconveniencing downtown citizens in Ottawa. And so therefore the lawsuit was filed, you know, like I said, $400 million, basically 400, it's just a little under $390 some million. I spent the afternoon yesterday with the civil lawyer giving affidavits for a motion filed against that. So I do believe we've got another court case coming up here by next Friday that we have to be done some paperwork, work some lawyer stuff with, and then but I mean, by that time Tamara and I are going to be in Ottawa prepping for a criminal trial, so there's a lot of stuff going on, and it seems to be all hitting at the same time right now.
Did you think that this would ever happen to you? I mean, I remember, this is so funny, it's a funny story. Because I talked to you right when you were starting out, right when you guys were starting out, right? Nobody knew it was going to happen. It was so amazing. And none of us ever could have thought that that the convoy would do what it did, that it would be put down the way that it was, that the prime minister would be as corrupt as he is. And now you're, I mean, what a journey you've been on.
It's been amazing. You know, the amount of support, we had a little get together here last weekend in my hometown of Swift Current, Saskatchewan, a little fundraiser, knowing that we're going to be gone for basically 2 months, and there's going to be living expenses and all the costs and the accommodations and travel and lawyers and all that. We packed a skating rink full of about 500 people showed up just in support of the drive that my wife and I are going to be taking across Canada again. That was pretty humbling to be sitting there at the front of a room full of, you know, 500 people of your hometown crowd, and they're all there to support you. They're all there to have a visit and sit down, and man, there's a lot of support out there, and we're very grateful, very thankful for that. We see that on a regular basis. I get a lot of messages on my social media from people. We get stuff in the mail on a regular, my basement is a shrine to Canadians that just send me things for, it is amazing. I should take photos of it and send them to you, Trish. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, what are the messages that people send? What is it that they want you to know? What's the big message?
I think to stay strong. Excuse me. There's more than one occasion I've got letters in my curio here stating that Canadians that were on the brink of suicide or heavily involved with alcohol or drug addiction, and when we fired those trucks up, they thought, you know, they gave them hope to the point where they weren't willing to take their life. And man, I feel bad for the ones that we couldn't have done it sooner to, you know, could have helped more people there.
I got those letters too. I know what that feels like. It's a huge responsibility, isn't it? But it's also kind of a gift, right? That you know you're doing something that makes a difference. It's remarkable what telling the truth can do. If we learn anything from this period in Canada's history, in history, period, it's that telling the truth must be paramount at all times. We cannot cower from that. We're going to go to a break, Chris, and we'll be back in a minute. More with Chris Barber and his upcoming court trials, both civil and criminal, coming up in Ottawa, Canada in September. Back in a moment.
Patrick Henningsen on TNT Radio.
They're trying to say that COVID cases are up. They're running the same playbook again for Europe, for the United States, and Asia. The COVID cases are up. There's a new variant, apparently. I swear they're trying it on. It's right across. It's not getting a lot of traction, but it's right across the mainstream here. They're trying it on. I kid you not, you guys. It's the exact same playbook. Now, you'd think it was totally delegitimized by all of their stupidness and the silliness. This might hurt some people's feelings. But anyone who still believes in variants of concern and variants, you got to be kidding me. People who are pushing the variant and pushing the existence of this SARS-CoV-2 virus, that quite frankly, there's no evidence at all that any such pathogen shown to be infectious in a biological setting was ever identified or found in Wuhan, China.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The Honor Flights Network is a national non-profit effort that comprises over 130 independent hubs nationwide, working together to show our veterans the appreciation and honor they deserve. Participation in an On a Flight trip to Washington, D.C. war memorials gives veterans the opportunity to remember friends and comrades lost and to share their stories and experiences with other veterans. The On a Flight Network is currently serving veterans from the World War II, Korean War, and Vietnam War eras, and all honored veterans travel at no cost to them. It is the volunteers and sponsors of the local hubs that make the mission succeed. Go to honorflight.org to learn how you can donate your time or treasure to honor those who gave so much to us. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
The MAGA Institute is dedicated to helping create a more informed, more involved, and more active electorate by providing a unique combination of candidate vetting and certification with voter information resources, constitutional education, and volunteer training. Our secret sauce is our nationwide network of volunteers who help us learn which candidates truly are for we the people. Go to MAGAinstitute.com to join our candidate vetting volunteer network or to support our mission with your donation. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, everybody. We're back with Chris Barber, and we're just doing a little debrief before he goes off very soon to face the music, as they say, in Ottawa, Canada. It is ridiculous. And, you know, what's interesting about the ongoing criminal prosecution is that I don't think any of this was proven during the inquiry into the ordering of the Emergencies Act. I mean, that what happened there should have actually, in my opinion, have caused the Crown Prosecutor to drop the charges. They didn't. I mean, they literally didn't really find that you guys had done anything wrong. So were you hoping that that might happen?
You know, I think I spoke with you before about this, Trish. When we were in the Emergencies Act inquiry there, the first couple of weeks of that, I had a really good feeling. I was there for 2 weeks on the ground when I testified. I spent some time in the courtroom. And I had a good feeling. I thought it was going to be a fair ruling. I thought Justice Rouleau was paying attention to us. He was there. And as soon as the politicians took the stage, the atmosphere changed, the mood changed, and you knew that it was basically just a sham. And it definitely came out that way, too.
Well, those things always are. I'm an old cynic who's seen enough of them going way back to the Warren Commission report into the murder of JFK. Mm-hmm. They never are honest, and they never find against the bad people. Their purpose is not to find against the bad people or bad decisions. Their purpose is to smooth things over so that people can go forward and forget this terrible thing the government did. Anyway, that's my opinion. So I just want to go back a bit to the civil thing. So what are they alleging you guys did that demands they get this multi-million dollar payout?
Basically, inconvenienced Ottawa citizens is basically what it comes down to. Did we honk a horn in a residential area? Did we idle a truck in a residential area? You know, as many people know, my truck was in downtown Ottawa for about a week, and then it was taken out. It was dirty. I wanted it washed, so we removed it from downtown Ottawa about the 7th of February. So I didn't blow a horn when I was down in Ottawa, but they're holding me personally and physically responsible for anyone that did, apparently.
It's just nuts. Completely crazy. Yeah. So is there a possibility in your head, and what is your lawyer saying about, I hope it's only a slim possibility that you might lose this thing? I mean, how are you approaching it in your own mind? The criminal charge.
Which one? The criminal charge?
The criminal,
well,
yeah.
You know, you're going up against the House. The House always wins. You're going up the government, the man, right? So, you know, it's hard to say that you're going to walk in there and you're going to win everything. I would love to see justice prevail and we would be acquitted of all charges. But, you know, you've got the full weight of the federal government kind of on top of you here. So I keep hoping, and I'll hope right until the verdict is read, I guess. But, you know, you never win against the government, unfortunately.
No, you're right. The House does always win. I know that because I saw the movie Casino, right? There was a lot of good lines about that.
Yeah.
And wasn't there? Yikes. You know, most of them from Joe Pesci, too, right? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So
I'm more excited to see Tamara again. You know, Tamara is somebody that I met the beginning of January 2022. We had like a month together where we were really good close friends, and then all of a sudden the government, that we were arrested. We were told that we couldn't have contact anymore unless we had legal representation. And so the last, 20 months we've been communicating through lawyers. It sucks. I'm excited to see her again. I'm excited to visit with her. It's going to be, get this past us, whatever it is, and we'll just get to move past it. So
when you say you're looking forward to seeing Tamara, because she rode out with you in your truck, did she not?
She did, yes. Yeah, I'd never known Tamara 2 weeks before the convoy started. I met her the morning we left the prairies here and started driving east towards the nation's capital. So I spent, a fair bit of time with her. She was in the truck with myself, my son, and my little dog, Zippy, that travels with us wherever we go. So the three of us went out in the truck together. Like I said, in the last 20 months, it's been a little bit different, and the burden and the weight of it all kind of sits on your shoulders. So I can't wait to get that out of there.
Yeah. Now tell me about when you say you haven't seen her, have you physically been in her presence in the last 2 years or no?
Probably twice we were able to meet up with, made sure legal counsel was present. We had a little lawyer meeting where we could sit and discuss things going forward. So yeah, just short communication, not a lot, but it's always weighing over you. We were at the Christine Anderson event together. We had to have, lawyers in between us the entire time. I had a lawyer attached to me. She had a lawyer attached to her, and make sure there was no photos taken. If we were walking past each other in the crowd, that was a problem. That's why Tamara was arrested for a breach charge. Somebody photographed her with a lawyer standing just off the side, and that was enough that they threw her in jail for another 20 days.
I mean, it's almost unbelievable. Let's talk about what happened, with the convoy, so people don't forget. And I hope it's not a story that you are, or that you ever get sick of talking about, because it's so important to this country. But take me back to those early days. What for you was the catalyst that made you decide to do this thing? And also, I don't think I know the answer to this. Whose idea was it to do a Truckee convoy? Do you even remember?
Well, the social media person that was contacted me with, she's facing troubles in Ontario and the government mandates for crossing the border. That was the catalyst that set me off. Was on the 15th of January, 2022, the federal government announced that you are no longer allowed to travel across the international border into the United States unless you had a COVID vaccine passport. And I had given in to the urge and became vaccinated so I could keep my job and my business running properly. But there were so many of my fellow drivers out there that were not willing to do that. And so people were quitting driving truck. They were retiring. They were taking Canadian-only loads. The federal government likes to say that there was about 10% of drivers that were not vaccinated. I say that's bull. I would say it'd be more like 30% to 40% possibly, because there's a lot of guys that didn't. We were really struggling in the industry for the last number of years, finding enough drivers that were capable and willing to cross that border. And so she reached out to me. She had issues with her. She was facing the same loss. And at first we were going to do slow rolls around our local provinces. We weren't going to go to Ottawa. And then basically in the conversations we had there, that it was the best thing to do was to go to Ottawa and try and protest. So that's how it born. And I used to be that guy, when the COVID vaccine passports came in Saskatchewan for, being able to eat in a restaurant or anything like that without it, I was mad. And that was just one more stepping stone, that just the straw that broke the camel's back, did they say?
Yeah, I felt the same way. I mean, I knew enough about the science and the development of vaccines to know it hadn't been tested properly. And also that my chance of dying of COVID was minuscule. But I also am just ornery. Like I don't tell me to do that. I'm not going to do it. And so I was just mad. I was mad for a really long time that my life had become so small and proscribed because of the mandates that, It was starting to weigh on my mental health a bit, as I think it did for a lot of people, which is maybe another reason that you guys were so embraced. When did you, where, what city did you start from, Chris?
So my hometown of Swift Current, Saskatchewan, we actually drove west towards, towards Alberta. And the plan was to meet Miss Tamara Leach and pick her up in her hometown of Medicine Hat, Red Cliff, Alberta. And, yeah. and then meet the West convoy as it came from the West Coast in Canada. So we drove west first. And so that led us on a path of about 3,200 kilometers that we had to go to get to Ottawa from where we picked up Miss Tamara.
Wow. And so you picked her up, and at what point in this effort did you begin to realize it was going to be a big deal?
Immediately, just when we rolled into Red Cliff to pick up Tamara, the news cameras were already there. And at that point, the media was, you know, basically somewhat on our side. People were curious. They were interested. The Prime Minister hadn't came out and started his propaganda against us yet. That was coming. When we hit the highway there, there was people adorned the highways of the local, the Medicine Hat, with Canadian flags. They were standing on overpasses. We had police units giving us traffic control through the city so nobody was, you know, for safety reasons. And then that carried on. And the Bald Prairies, minus 30, there was, like, farmers standing on the side of the road. Our local Hutterite colonies, the German community, was standing on the side of the road. They were everywhere in the desolate parts of the prairies. There was people adorning the highways. It was amazing.
Yeah, those images will last forever, I think, in the minds of Canadians who were awake and very, very grateful. As I have said about you guys a lot, like, I felt, oh, the cavalry's finally coming. You know, someone's finally, because that was what drove a lot of people crazy during COVID times, was the idea that we were helpless to affect any possible or mount any possible pushback. We were losing in the courts. The demonstrations we had here in Toronto were weak and ragtag. And we just couldn't affect change. And clearly, and I've learned this because of this film I've been working on, you know, the politicians realized after lockdown one that many people wanted to be locked down because they were so scared. So they weren't going to give up lockdowns and lose political points the way anybody who suggested they didn't want to lock down, like DeSantis and other people, you know, were really, really criticized by the media. So I think the idea, we all felt very, very downtrodden. I mean, I did, and the people in this town that I knew who were awake did too. So seeing you guys coming through those overpasses and down, and so many of you and so many flags, I really thought, wow, you know, this is my country. These are my people. This is my tribe. Because I wasn't feeling that way in downtown Toronto, which was very COVIDian. Everybody here wanted to be wearing 10 masks and close the schools forever and, you know, blah, blah. So that was a very big thing for me.
The one thing that I think it made the biggest impact on me was the way we look at the Canadian flag. We've always looked at it. I've always looked at the U.S. flag and the way the Americans look at the stars and stripes and just hold it so high, and it's everywhere. And then all of a sudden in Canada, we did the same thing. It's still, you drive down the highway and there's Canadian flags just hanging in people's driveways all over the place. And then we've asked for that now too. When we start this journey next Friday, when we leave Saskatchewan here, and my wife and I are going to drive out in our car out to Ottawa, we've asked a few people that are asking what they can do. Can we be standing on the side of the highway for you when you drive across? And I said, just stick your Canadian flags out on the highway. Please let us see what we've seen on our way back. I want to show my wife the journey that we had going out there and stop at all the little places that we stopped at. And so I'm excited for this drive. I'm excited to get this started.
Are you excited?
Yeah, very much so.
Why, Chris? Why?
We have the power of a nation behind us. The amount of people that reach out to us on a regular basis from social media, via just phone calls and emails, and there's so many people that support us. There's so many people that are backing us, and I think that's the power that we feel going east. So we can finish it, we can get it past us, and then we can move on after that.
What happens if they send you to jail? Then what?
Well, the last little while here, we've been working really hard with my family. My son has stepped up into the ranks now and is doing the dispatch for the company. We don't run a big trucking company, but we've got 5 trucks on the road. So it's just planning, making sure I've got enough hay in the barn for a few years of horse feed for the horses. And my son is running the business successfully. My daughter is going to take a year off of going into being a school teacher, and she's going to be here to help out run the paperwork side of the office. So we've prepared for the inevitable. If it happens, it happens. I can't do much about it. So we can just prepare for it and make sure that we know what's going on and going up to it. So, yeah, it's a possibility. And we're nervous about that, of course.
You are, eh? Nervous?
But just to be prepared for it, right? So, you know, there's people that we saved, you know, so if this is the way they want this to go, and if we have to go to jail because of it, then I guess, you know, that's what happens. So obviously I would lose, you know, I've got a farm, I've got a family. I've never been in a courtroom in my life. I've never been in a police car, nor have I ever had handcuffs on. So if that's the punishment for something, someone that's been a law-abiding citizen his whole life and now all of a sudden has to go to jail for the world's biggest and most peaceful protests, and I guess we're proving more points of how corrupt the country is, right?
Well, I would think so. I mean, this is a really, really bad look. And I do hope and pray that my fellow citizens wake up to what is actually happening here. If you don't mind me asking a personal question, Chris, and feel free to deflect if you want to, but how has your wife been about this? Has she been stalwart and steadfast, or has she had moments where she was kind of mad that you decided to do this?
No. She's had emotional moments more often than anything. She's never been angry at the fact that this has happened or that we're in the position we're at. I think she's more of a quiet and, you know, reserved person that likes a piece of the farm and the peace of quiet of just her and I, quality time. So now it's kind of cast her husband into a public light where, you know, there's a lot more attention on her husband that she would like some days, but she deals with it quite well. She has times when she gets a little emotional and it takes a hug and a good cry. And then, and I'm very thankful that she gets to come out with me. It's been a question for the last number of months here, whether she was going to actually be able to attend the trial with me. And it was just in the last week that she was able to get a leave from her job. You know, she's got a job too, and it's going to be different, but at least I'll have somebody with me there that I can that'll just that support walking into court every morning, knowing my wife is beside me that's going to be huge for me too.
Yeah, really good, really good. She must be a remarkable person. What did she make of the convoy blowing up the way it did? I mean, was she kind of sitting back there and thinking, "What the heck is going on?"
Yeah, she didn't realize it was. She flew out to Ottawa about the first week. So after we arrived in Ottawa and we realized just how big things were going to be, she jumped on a plane and flew out so she could be with us there. She did a remarkable Facebook post the morning we left. I left in the dark, and I think it was about 6 o'clock in the morning in the winter time, and I've got my truck leaving the driveway, and she videotaped me leaving the driveway and posted it on social media, you know, saying how proud she was of the fact that we were taking this step and fighting for. So I'll have to show that to you. That's when I get to meet you in Ottawa in a couple of weeks, which I can't wait. I will introduce you to my lovely wife, and I will get her to show you that post. It'll bring a tear to your eye, what she wrote.
Oh, for sure. I'll be sobbing, as I did through a lot of convoy things. I'm going to go to a break, and when we come back, I just want to touch on, so people really understand what happened, what was going on during those days in Ottawa, what really happened during those days, and then kind of the lead up to the end there when he invoked the Emergencies Act. We'll get into that. But in the meantime, we've got to go to a break, and we'll be back soon with Chris Barber of the Trucker Convoy.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Well, we have some interesting weather coming up globally. First of all, the heat wave that's raging in Europe now will reverse by the time we get to the end of August and the first week of September. So you folks that are boiling away in Europe, well, guess what? Another shot of cool is coming down the road. Now, the central part of the United States has had a cool, wet summer overall. I'm not talking Texas here. I'm talking further north in the Corn Belt. And we have a phenomenon there called corn sweat, where there's a lot of water in the corn. And when it gets hot sometimes, the dew points come up quite a bit, and plus the ground is wet. Well, we're going to see some corn sweat in the central part of the United States. Now, I know if you're living in Australia or the UK, you're putting saying, going, what do I care about corn sweat for? But we could have some outrageous dew points. In fact, some of the heat indexes could hit 110. Oh, my goodness. That would be like the actual temperatures that we've hit in the 1930s. And, of course, we've got Hillary that's going up into California. And I think we're going to have a tropical storm hit on the Texas Gulf Coast south of Corpus Christi Tuesday or Wednesday, and another feature develop in the Caribbean. But you know something? It's late August. It's supposed to be hot. It's supposed to have tropical storms and hurricanes. So maybe it's much ado about nothing. Anyway, I want everyone to have a great weekend. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watch Dog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only way you know.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
For decades, senior government and intergovernmental organization officials have peddled fear with climate change alarmism. In June 1989, Noel Brown, director of the New York Office of the United Nations Environment Program, said that governments had a 10-year opportunity to arrest the greenhouse effect before it went beyond human control. He claimed that entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the warming trend was not stabilized by the year 2000. In reality, global carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuels and industry were 62% higher in 2021 than in 1989, and sea level has barely changed.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT with Trish Wood.
Hi, everybody. This is Trish Wood, and I'm back with Chris Barber, who is one of the leaders of Canada's magnificent, globally respected, life-changing, and forever in our hearts convoy that was crushed under the boot heel of tyrannical policymaking out of Ottawa. And he is now, along with Tamara Leach, who rode in the cab of his truck called Big Red, all the way from the western part of this country down to Ottawa to protest mandates. And in so doing, gave all of us battered and bruised Canadians a sense of hope and renewal. And let me just say this, brotherhood and sisterhood too. It reconnected us in ways that were not happening during what I call now the COVIDian times. So Chris, when you got to Ottawa and you realized this was going to be a big deal, did you have hopes that the Prime Minister was going to come out and speak to you guys? Because he seems to speak to everybody else, but I'm just wondering if you thought he would come out.
We all hoped that he would. I guess the hoping was all we had, because his intentions were never to listen to us. He never wanted to listen to the blue-collar class of Canadian, you know, truck drivers and citizens that were tired of his mandates, and the fact that we just stood up to him in the first place was enough for him to say that he wanted nothing to do with us. But could you imagine what would have accomplished if he would have just came out and had a conversation with us, or sent some delegates out to have a conversation?
Well, it would have shown leadership and it would have united the country. But what he did instead was start a smear campaign as soon as the rubber hit the road, didn't he? So he actually made it so he almost couldn't come out and talk to you, because he'd convinced the country you guys were all Nazis or something, right? That was his MO.
He did. Yep. Name calling right off the bat. There was, as soon as the convoy was organized and started rolling, Trudeau was with the propaganda media of the Canadian media, just slandering, name calling, and just dividing Canadians more that he'd, you know, and that's all he's ever done is just divide Canada since he's been in power. And I believe that's all his motive and his mandate's ever been.
You know, you mentioned just before the break how proud you were to see Canadian flags being displayed and maybe flying more than they have, you know, in recent history. But, you know, there is a part of this country too that sees the flying of our flag and the use of the word freedom as a far right kind of attack on the country. Believe it or not, I mean, it is true that that exists. What do you say to those people, Chris?
wake up. This is more of the same fear mongering and the negative campaigning that this government and the media has done to Canadian citizens. And I feel sorry for people that can't open their eyes and see that they've been lied to. Anyone that ever attended the convoy in Ottawa knows that it was the most peaceful and patriotic and humbling experience that anyone could ever go through. You know, from the people and the hugs and the tears and that's what it was. It was Canadians after 2 years of being pushed down and oppressed by your government under these mandates. We could finally breathe again, and that's exactly what it was. And the government did not like that, and therefore, you know, destroyed it, tried to destroy it anyway.
Tell me about the mood there, because it did seem for quite a long time that it was a bit of a celebration as much as it was a protest.
It was. Yeah, it was Canadians coming together. You know how this country works as well as I do. This country has always been divided for East versus West, the West being, you know, the energy sector, the East being the business, more of the business, apparently. And the government's found a way to divide us over that for many, many years, and we broke that barrier. We had people from the East hugging people from the West, and there was Quebec flags versus Saskatchewan, Alberta. It was Canada that actually came together again, and there was no oppression. There was no government control over us anymore, and it was peace. It was love. It was unity. Like I said, there was grown men crying on your shoulder. There was people talking about their experiences with their loved ones that had passed away in care homes, and people weren't allowed to see them. This was it. We broke that barrier.
I think what you're referring to in talking about those kind of anecdotes that you heard from people is that there was a level of cruelty meted out against the citizenry in the form of public policy during COVID, which was kind of my motivating factor for, you know, starting the podcast and making my big life change, was that I could not believe they were doing these things in the name of public health. And I think that was maybe the motivating factor too behind a lot of the support you got. The government revealed something about itself in doing what it did, and in not hearing the kind of cries from the heart of the citizenry who were saying, "You are hurting us. Please stop this." You know, they didn't listen to that, did they?
They arrested kids for playing outdoor hockey in Canada. They graveled outdoor skating rinks with gravel trucks so people couldn't skate outdoors, because COVID was so, you know, dangerous. But yet Walmart remained open, and all those big, you know, grocery chain stores or Home Depot or that sort of thing, that was okay to go in there, but you couldn't go into a mom and pop restaurant. You know, I've got to know Chris Scott from the Whistle Stop Cafe in Muir, Alberta, and there was one place where, you know, Chris lost his, he's going to pretty much lose everything by the time the government's done with him here over this, because they're still not stopping that. He kept his restaurant open under the mandates, and Alberta Health came after him aggressively. The RCMP chained his doors shut, arrested him. He's hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, in legal fees right now, and still fighting this fight.
And what city is he in at the Whistle Stop? What town is that?
It's a little community called Muir, Alberta. It's about a half hour from Red Deer, Alberta. It's just off of the beaten path, right on the side of the highway. It's a little truck stop, little cafe. He's a good guy, and he just stood up against the mandates as well as so many other people tried and were just put down by the government.
Wow. He might be somebody we're speaking to. So, you created this mandate, you created this atmosphere, that was kind of against, it was against the mandates, actually. And it was very celebratory, mostly, although there was a lot of sorrow there, people leaning on you, I think, for support of some of these terrible, terrible stories we were hearing. When did you start to worry that you were wearing out your welcome? I know that the chief in Ottawa, police chief, was becoming a bit of a problem. What was your first inkling that you guys might be in trouble?
I guess it was the government rhetoric ramping things up. We worked with law enforcement the entire time. We worked with police liaisons. We worked with the city. We tried to work with the city. There was communications with the city, but I believe before there was ever, there was no negotiations or no any conversation with the government itself. But as soon as the city came to us and said, hey, would you like to have a conversation? The dialogue was then opened. And it seemed like then the attitude changed after that. The federal government was the one that, that essentially stepped in, and I don't know if they didn't like the fact that the city was willing to work with us, and that was the provocation it took for the federal government to then say, okay, this is done. We cannot have anyone working with these people, and they just kept pushing that narrative. You watched the police that you worked with for the last 3 weeks and got along really well with. Those ones kind of backed off a little bit. New ones came in. Peter Slowly, the police chief of the Ottawa City Police, was removed. He stepped down, and then Chief Bell stepped in, and Chief Bell was a lot more aggressive than what Mr. Soli was.
Well, I think the mayor was quite aggressive, too. He was pretty vocal about not liking you guys, wasn't he? I remember correctly.
He was pretty hateful. There's some pretty horrible things that Mayor Watson said about us. And like I said, too, it's kind of like the Prime Minister's attitude. Leaders lead, and, you know, a conversation and dialogue would have done so much better than just name-calling. And between Mayor Watson and his name-calling and virtue signaling, and it was no different than Justice Trudeau, you know, Prime Minister Trudeau's.
Yeah. So let's just talk about the kind of the beginning of the end. I know from Tamara that you guys were kind of wearing out a bit, weren't you? You must have been tired.
It was long days. It was minus 20 degrees, minus 30 degrees. The humidity level in the city of Ottawa is very humid, so it's a different kind of a cold than we were used to on the dry prairies here. And let's face it, your days were full, 16, 17 hour days. You were walking the streets, making sure people were okay, trying to get the emergency lanes, making sure the emergency lanes were open, hoping that there was going to be some sort of a dialogue open. I mean, we had, you know, the Honorable Brian Peckford, which is one of the last living signatures of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in Canada here, that was standing on the ground with us in a hotel room, working with us, trying to make sure that the charter that he helped write was defended. We had a ton of support, and no matter who showed up, it didn't seem to matter to Trudeau. We even had the last weekend, there was a talk of a bunch of NHL hockey players flying up from all over the U.S. and helping out the kids. As you know, we had a kind of a little bit of a skating rink. It was a street hockey called the Bear Cup, I believe it was, in front of the Supreme Court. And they'd have little hockey tournaments there with the kids. And could you imagine the impact on that if they had, you know, NHL hockey players show up to play street hockey with these kids? It would have been unreal.
And why didn't they?
That was the weekend that the hammer came down, and we were all arrested, and Trudeau put a stop to it.
Well, that would have been something, wouldn't it? I mean, holy smokes, what a wonderful Canadian moment that would have been. So tell me about how this thing was winding up. Tamara said to me that, and I don't know if you've co-signed this idea or not, but she said that you guys were pretty worn out, and that if the Prime Minister had come out and at least attempted to negotiate some kind of a workable situation, that you likely would have gone home without any incident at all. That's what she said anyway, that everybody was tired by that point.
Yeah,
do you feel that way too? Yeah.
I do, yeah. We were all tired. I remember the minute that they placed my hands behind my back and put me in handcuffs, and my thought in my mind was, oh, thank goodness, I can go sleep now. You know, you get a nice quiet cell and you can sleep. It wasn't that way. It wasn't the most comfortable. They weren't putting you up in the Marriott or anything. It was a concrete slab, but it was peace and quiet, and you just kind of lie there, and you were there with your thoughts, I guess, for the 26 hours I was arrested. But yes, I believe we were all ready to go. We were 3 weeks away from home, a month away from home, apparently, and we were tired. We wanted this to be finished, and people wanted to return to normal again. And a conversation with your sitting Prime Minister, who is one of the ones that should be leading this country and all the people in it, would have been a good thing.
Yeah. And so I, the day that you were handcuffed, I remember somebody said to me, they called me and they said, the police are looking for Chris or something. And I thought, ooh, what's going on? And, were you given a heads up that the police were looking for you?
No, we didn't. Actually, the arrest warrants were actually given, not the arrest warrants, but the orders to arrest protesters were given the day after Tamara and I were arrested. So we were arrested before the emergency, not before the order for dismantling the convoy. So we didn't know. I was walking down a street with my son, actually. If anybody Googles my name and you see my arrest photo, you'll see that I have a smile on my face as the officer's emptying my pockets. And I had my 18-year-old son there, and my boy was walking with me that morning, as well as a group of other people. And I looked across the street at my son standing on the street corner, and I seen that same scared and hurt and the tears almost welling up in his eyes, the same look that he was, you know, when he was 6 or 7 years old. And so I had to give him a big smile, and I said, "Hey, you know, Jonathan, smile. It's okay. Everything's going to be fine." And I gave him that grin, and it was captured on film. And that's exactly why I did what I did that day. A lot of people comment, like, you were smiling when you were arrested. Well, I was trying to get the look of fear off of his face, is what I was trying to do.
Wow. And what has he said about that day? Obviously, you've talked to him. What does he say about it?
Oh, he was scared. You know, his dad was being hauled away in a police car, and, you know, that's it. Traumatic for, I guess, any kid to go through when you watch your father, you know, never been in trouble with the law before, and then all of a sudden being placed in handcuffs. Jonathan, my boy, traveled out there with us, and he was part of the whole convoy, and he was, to this day, he's still proud of what we accomplished out there.
Is he?
Proud of.
Aww.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. My family's very supportive. I would say my two biggest fans are my mom and my mother, and my father, Danny and Judy Barber, are two of the biggest supporters we could possibly ever have. They live about a mile away from where I'm on my homestead yard, where my great grandfather home farmed back in, you know, the early 1900s. My father lives about a mile away from where my yard is here on the yard that he raised me in. So we've got a huge family history here. And we'll continue that.
Well, that's such a great story. I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. So let's wrap up here with so they put the cuffs on you. I guess they take you away. How long did they hold you? I think you weren't kept as long as Tamara, right? Wasn't she in for like 50 days or
no.
something?
And yeah, Tamara was in for like 49 days. So I was arrested on the Thursday, on the 17th of February. I was in custody till the bail hearing was held on the Friday before the long weekend. And the lawyer pushed pretty hard. I had a way home, the truck. I had funds to get home through the business, I had fuel cards. And I had a surety, which was my wife. And so the judge I was the first arrested, the first released then. I met my bail conditions and I was released. I had 24 hours to exit the city of Ottawa, and I had 72 hours to exit the province of Ontario. I met those conditions and traveled home. Tamara, on the other hand, when she her bail conditions were on the Saturday, because we traveled out together, she essentially didn't have a way home, and you know, with the mandates and all that, she couldn't jump on a plane and fly home. So she was. This is circumstances. Her bail was held off till the Tuesday of the long weekend, and then of course the convoy was dismantled over the weekend.
Ugh, one of the saddest days in the history of this country. People were devastated, and we haven't even talked about the frozen bank accounts yet, but that's maybe for another day. Thank you so much for doing this, Chris Barber. I'm very, very grateful, and I will see you in Ottawa. I'm going to be covering the trial, so I hope it's a short one and that they drop the charges, if that's a possibility. But good luck to you, and thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on, Trish. I'll look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'll see you there. This is Trish Wood on TNT Radio. That was Chris Barber from The Convoy, and I'll be back in a while. I'm going on holiday, and then I will see you, and I hope you have a wonderful couple of weeks. Bye-bye.